Dit is een podcast van operamagazine.nl. Mezzo-sopraan Sarah Connolly was onlangs even in Nederland voor een recital. Anderhalf jaar geleden was ze voor het laatst hier, toen ze op het laatste moment inviel voor George Di Donato in Ariodante van Händel. Het was ook Händel die haar in 2008 voor precies één avond naar Amsterdam bracht. Ook toen als invaller in Giulio Cesare bij de Nederlandse opera. Helemaal gepland en met Sarah Connolly in de hoofdrol was de uitvoering van Dido en Aeneas van Henry Purcell in het Amsterdamse Concertgebouw in februari 2011. Koningin Dido in de opera van Purcell, Dido in Les Troyens van Berlioz, Medea, ze zingt vaak koninklijke rollen. Miss Sarah Connolly, welcome in Holland. Last summer, someone in Britain wrote that you must be the reigning queen of English opera. So, Your Majesty, welcome.
There, clearly I'm wrong there, mm-hmm. But I certainly like to be playing all these queens. This year I've been playing Phèdre and Médée, so I suppose that's possibly why it's happened.
Do you ever play, let's say, common women?
Funnily enough, Carmen hasn't come my way. I don't know why it hasn't, because vocally it's right. But that's probably Charlotte in Werther. Happened a long time ago. So there's not too many. No, a lot of these characters are aristocrats that I play.
Can you relate to those people in terms of how they feel and think?
Because I think the composers certainly Handel, Mozart, Rameau and Charpentier meant these people to have real emotions, normal reactions to situations, difficult situations. However, they had to behave in a certain way because it was expected. And the dilemma was, how do they behave with decorum, with manners, and or not in the case of Medea. But it's always interesting to read around the subjects, not only historically, meaning referring back to Euripides in the case of Medea, but also to read around the time the composer was writing and what his influences were and who he was writing for and about. And that always is part of the mix. You always sort of try to work out what they were thinking, what they were reading, what they were looking at. And that informs my performance and productions can be modernized and can be put in whichever siècle or whatever decade. But I think ultimately you have to be true to what the composer wanted musically. And I'm quite strict about that.
But you do a lot more than just reading the score.
Yes, the score is the number one starting point. Callas always said that. Everything you need to know is in the score, and she's quite right. And I have to say, I've mumbled that under my breath when I've come across a director who is departing from the score quite dangerously and wants to work against what the composer wanted. I mean, I don't mind a bit of a departure. I mean, I'm not saying I'm stuck in the mud, but when something is so obvious and the director wants to depart from it, it's very difficult for a singer then to try and reconcile what the composer wanted without being accused of being the music police, which is the most irritating response. But then those who say that are directors who haven't thought it through, quite frankly, because I think quite a lot of singers, especially young singers, just do what the director says, and if they don't, they get into trouble. That's the difficulty. Whereas I think at my age, I've managed to sort of... I don't work with difficult directors, I have to say. I know who they are and I avoid them. And I work with people who are true to what the composer wanted. Richard Jones, for example, is wonderfully diverse and modern. And always, always he considers what the librettist and what the composer wanted, and then he can play with that. I trust him. And David McVicar too, and Robert Carson, and these people, they and David Alden, and they respect what the composer was doing. They understand what he was or she was trying mm-hmm. to do.
John Copley.
And John Copley, absolutely. I've been safe with these people. I trust them.
Het kostte tijd om voor haarzelf vast te stellen dat ze als solozangeres een carrière ambieerde. Talking about your career, you started bit with being a BBC singer for 5 years.
Yes.
You went in the Kleinborn chorus.
Mm-hmm.
Was it because you didn't dare to become a solo performer?
I didn't feel ready. I didn't feel a complete enough artist to know. This is instinctive. I don't think it was conscious. An instinctive feeling that if I were to stand up on that stage and sing an aria, I'm not quite sure why I was doing it. And I now realize that was my safety net. My safety net is to know what I'm singing and to have my take on it, my interpretation. Without that, we're just listening to another singer with a pretty voice. And when you listen to leader competitions at the Wigmore or wherever they are, often the people who don't get through to the finals are those who haven't really worked out what the song means or their angle is.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get just another version of a performance by, you know, a copy of somebody.
And you like to be someone original.
Yes. Listening to the greats, like the great leader singers, Brigitte Fassbender, I always listen to her before I sing anything. I may not agree with what she does, but I'm really interested to know her thoughts from the Brahms, Alto Rhapsody. I think she sings that superbly. I can see why she's thinking the thoughts. I can see her intensity. I can understand it. I think she's an extraordinary performer, and it comes across. I mean, I've watched her sing many times, but I can hear what she's doing. And Christa Ludwig for, you know, the intensity and beauty, her Das Lied von der Erde, I can never get that out of my mind, much like I can't get Janet Baker's Elgar out of my mind, even though I sing a lot of Elgar. It's still the supreme performance on disc. But I think it's important that you must relate to the poetry and to what the composer intended and what he was intending
mm-hmm.
To create. And your response to that, often, I mean, for example, when I'm learning a role, I don't listen to the recordings, even though I might have heard it a while back, but I don't intentionally listen to recordings anywhere near the learning process. I must have my own response to something before I listen to, say, Lorraine Hunt singing Midi. I listened to her the week before when I'd learned it, and was pleasantly surprised to hear that we had arrived at similar sort of feelings for things. But I really wouldn't have listened to her because I couldn't have got that out of my head.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very important to have a discography and to listen to the greats, but perhaps not around an actual performance.
Voor het platenlabel Chandos en met The Orchestra of the Age of Enlightenment maakten ze een opname van Dido en Ineers die ze grotendeels zelf kon bepalen. Zelf regelden ze de financiering en kozen de vocale solisten. Niet gebruikelijk in de klassieke muziekwereld.
The Dido and Ineers project came about through my dissatisfaction with the castings on discs. There was always, you know, there was always a great singer or two in the cast list, but then there'd be some who let the side down, or there'd be strange tempos or strange arrangements. So none of them were to my liking, and it's a piece that means a lot to me and always has. So I asked Chandos if they would consider putting a disc together with singers of my choice, and the OAE were very keen to do it. They said, you choose the cast and the money, you raise the money, and we'll play.
You're quite fond of this orchestra of the Age of Enlightenment, I think.
Yes, they are lovely people as well. And they know my singing now. They know... They know my idiosyncrasies, whatever they are. I don't know what they are, but they understand and support so well.
Mm-hmm. Was it a big success in terms of selling? Do you know that?
I'd say it did pretty well, and was definitely held up as a viable option for those who wanted to perhaps move away from the very early music sound. Because while we are observing 18th century performance practice, we are very much singing with 20th century trained voices. So it's not Emma Kirkby and Kate Bott, wonderful though that disc is. It is the opposite of that. However, it is, we are really observing with Liz Kenny and Stephen Devine were very much involved
in... They conducted, directed.
I asked them to do that, and I didn't want a conductor sort of saying, you sing it like this. I couldn't bear it. And in fact, that's not the way it would have been done anyway. So in many senses, we were going back to 17th century performance practice, whereby the conductor, if you like, was just the person who kept it together, kept the choir together. And that's all that was needed. It was an understanding that you set your tempo and off you go. And there's nobody saying... speed up, slow down, it's up to you. And I think that is very much a 17th and early 18th century performance practice.
A very natural sound. Mm. That's...
But some of those ground bases are so profound that I think they deserve a very luxurious sound, both instrumentally and vocally. And Jerry Finley and John Mark Ainsley as the sailor, I mean, how much more luxury can you get, really?
Sarah Connolly is een zangeres die haar vak serieus neemt, maar ze is ook moeder van een dochter van 10. Haar autobiografie heeft als motto voor de laatste 10 jaar, Enjoying Myself at Last. The last part of your autobiography on your website is called Enjoying Myself at Last. Mm. And that period of maybe you're more happy because you're more confident on stage seemed to be parallel with becoming a mother. Is being a mother something that's... brings away all the other tensions of performing and
interesting
audience.
I've often thought that myself. I think it stops you becoming egocentric. You can't be egocentric and a mother. You can't be too obsessed with failure or success even. You have something in your life that needs you more than you need to sing. Having said that, my husband, by being the primary carer when I go away, is that his gift to me, if you like, or one of his gifts to me, is to allow me to carry on singing. Because I know that at home she's being well looked after and I don't need to worry. Or pay a fortune on nannies and things. So I definitely would agree that she... Her presence keeps my head level, and that, you know, I can't worry too much about whether something is perfect or not, because actually there are times to walk away and say, I've done my best for this moment, say a recording. I can't worry about it anymore because I need to do some shopping because the fridge is empty, you know. or I have to get to school for the teacher's parents' teacher evening. You know, there's no time to think about, do I know the music well enough for tomorrow's recital? I'll have to be at the school in 10 minutes. You know, so it can be, there are the many, many situations, and I'm sure you understand that as a mother, they are great levelers, you know, especially when they're babies. You can't, it's wonderful. I wouldn't swap it for anything, but the anxiety of being away is, I know something that is shared by all parents. But certainly my commitment to the music has not changed. I just have to be careful how much I commit myself to. And that's something that I am keeping a close eye on at the moment. Oh,
The leader recitals have an old-fashioned
stigma.
That's a good word, stigma. Do you believe in modernizing the form of standing near a piano, singing in a beautiful gown, and is there anything to be renewed in leader singing?
I would say your job as a leader singer is to interpret the music of the music you have in front of you, and that means knowing everything you can about that piece of music and getting yourself out of the way. So if you turn up wearing something distracting or being distracting, moving about too much, trying to appeal to some strange idea of modernizing, I don't know how you would do it. On the concert platform, I think your job is to express the music and in the most natural way possible. And in my book, that means not making your clothes and makeup and everything come first. They should be in the background. So I don't wear flashy clothes on the recital. I don't wear primary colours. I don't wear things that might, after half an hour, people think I'm fed up of looking at a red dress. I'm fed up of looking at a blue dress. That they actually look at you and your face more than they do the frock. That's just my personal take. I've often thought, however, that having seen Julia Strake and Ian Bostridge perform their Winterreise on film, directed by David Alden, that on the concert platform it would be difficult, but certainly on film it is interesting, I think, to perhaps move around a bit. I really, really want to sing the Maria Stuart Lieder. I want someone to have the confidence to stage that with me, so that for some of the songs she's sitting, some of the songs she's standing, and she can get up and move around throughout the recital. I suggested it to one or two pianists and they shuddered with horror. You can't do that to that music. It's all internal. It's all about the words. I say, yes, but if it's done cleverly, it mustn't ever distract from the complexity or the emotional simple message. For example, Andy Musique. What on earth could you do with that other than just deliver it? I mean, it's just a homage, a short, simple homage, perfect in my book. Why would anyone want to do anything with that, or Die Krähe, or any Winterreise? Yes, you could perhaps sit down for some of them. It's quite limiting, really, and most concert halls don't have the lighting. Or the people, it was hard enough the other day at the Wigmore to get someone to light us in the rehearsal. There was nobody there. And we said, what are we going to do? Oh, the house manager will just turn it on. Well, what will they turn on and what will we see? And, you know, this is very haphazard, really. Certainly, somebody would have to employ somebody to be there to do it. Now, if you were putting on a performance and there was a lot of fuss and hoo-ha about it, or should we say hype, then yes, I just those people who detract from leader recitals as being stuffy and stuck, I don't think they go to leader recitals, to be honest, because these days when you see someone like Holzmeier or Florian Bursch or any of these people, they know what they're doing. I mean, do we need to distract from that? They know what they're doing. And maybe the repertoire needs to be considered, not perhaps to be... That's important, that the repertoire isn't dull. But ultimately, you've got to have a singer who's a poet. And if you can dress up a singer, I mean, metaphorically speaking, you can have them sitting, standing, moving about. If they can't actually give a three-dimensional performance of a lead, an art song, then why do we need to watch them move around the stage?
Next April,
I am looking forward to
Whitmore Hall, you're performing with that Duparc singer who lives almost around the corner.
He's wonderful.
You'll be doing Duparc songs, which are new to you, I guess.
No, I've sung them all my life, and surprisingly, I just haven't done them recently. And those songs really fit me very well. I love singing du Parc.
And you'll be seeing those with Henk Neven together in Wigmore Hall.
Isn't it lovely? And April. We're making a CD of it as well, so that's great.
That's great news for Dutch fans.
Yes.
Of your voice and of Henk Neven's voice.
I'm looking forward to meeting him. I've never met him, I've only heard him.
Thank you.
Oh, pleasure.
Miss Connolly, I wish you all the best.
Thank you very much. Nice to meet you, and you're incredibly well prepared.
A very, very, really small present, but I have a present about the future. It's Henk Neven's last CD,
oh,
The Sea.
Wonderful.
And so.
Isn't he lovely? Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Dit was een podcast van operamagazine.nl. Al het opera nieuws vindt u iedere dag op www.operamagazine.nl.